Back here on the beat on WGN Radio 720, Adam Hogan, Sam Panayotovich. Got a question here from a texter. It's a pretty good question from the 312. Why the name of the show, The Beat? And this is the first weekend of The Beat here on WGN. It'll be myself, Connor McKnight, and Jared Payton for the most part. We got Sam here filling in tonight. I'm sure he'll be around a lot in the future, too, here on the show. And it's The Beat because it's the sports beat. You know, with Connor and I are on the beat of Chicago sports. Jared's probably, I guess, more of an analyst per se. I don't know. Sort of the heartbeat of Chicago sports. That was the thinking behind the name. So that is why it's called The Beat. And we're happy to be here. We're happy to have this show for you guys here on WGN. And we look forward to doing it every weekend, Saturday and Sunday at 3 o'clock as we get through the winter months of the sports season. But an exciting time with football going on, two good football games today, and that's why we bring in our next guest here on The Beat, and that's Eric Edholm from Yahoo Sports. And Eric, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining us.
Give me the beat. I'm ready. What's going on with you?
Yeah, well, tell us what's going on today with the NFL, and right now the Colts leading Denver 14-10 in the third quarter, but all the talk today, I think, is about that play in the Green Bay Dallas game, right?
Right. Came down to 4th and 2, and Cowboys decided to go for it in the final minutes of the game. You know, down 5 points, and I guess the play call surprised me a little bit. You know, going with a fade pass or deep throw down on the sideline, but they hadn't really found Dez Bryant all day. He catches the ball, a spectacular play, goes over Sam Shields, skies up and gets it. Comes down, takes 2, maybe 3 steps, but then, as Bears fans will know, the Calvin Johnson rule was in effect there, and as he went to the ground, the ball, kind of shook loose a little bit, hit the ground, and yet if you watch it in real time, you would say it was a catch. Obviously, frame by frame, you slow it down, you see it hit the ground, and you read the NFL rule book, and you say, okay, according to the NFL, that's not a catch, even if our eyes say something totally different.
Eric, let's not sugarcoat it anymore. He caught the ball. That's a catch.
Exactly.
That's a catch. I see the screenshots. I've got buddies sending me videos and vines. The more I see these screenshots and little clips, the more mad I get because he caught the ball. That was an amazing catch. That's an all-time catch in the playoffs, and the officials have the fortitude to overturn it. That ticked me off.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly what I wrote. I mean, you totally stole my thunder there. That's exactly what I felt was, it's when you see it, you say to yourself, that's an amazing football play. And what do we want to watch when we watch football games? We want to see these incredible athletes go out there and make outstanding plays, the plays that they were, gifted by God or that they've trained so hard to, to get in the position to make, whatever the case may be. It was a great football play, but this silly little rule, which has been tried to, try to be changed before, and that happened, 2010, I guess, with the Johnson rule. It's been 4 years of, teeth gnashing over this silliness, and here we are, doing the same thing again in a playoff game. I know one play doesn't change a game, but come on. I mean, that puts you on the 1 yard line with a chance to take either a 1, 2, or a 3 point lead with, just a couple minutes left.
He's Eric Edholm from Yahoo Sports covering the NFL. And Eric, I think the point of the rule, I guess, is because there's going to be other plays where the ball does hit the ground and maybe it's a little bit more gray area. I don't know. I mean, why do they at some point, I guess you just have to draw the line, and they have decided that anytime the ball hits the ground and moves, that it's incomplete, even if it's going to rob spectacular plays. And you guys are right. I mean, that was just an unbelievable – it would have been the play of the week. I mean, the play that everyone would have been talking about all week.
Yeah, and I think you made 3 very important words to throw out there, draw the line, because at some point you do have to define it. And, there really can't be too much gray area, even though calls like pass interference and other things are certainly left to interpretation. But – when it comes to a catch, it's either a catch or it's not, right? I mean, we all sort of subconsciously know this, but when you write these rules, they have to be so specific and, unfortunately, probably have to make sort of some blanket statements. covering, like you said, anything that involves the ball, A, touching the ground, B, shifting within his control or that he loses control, and that negates the whole thing. So, I mean, I don't know anybody who goes to games to see a ref looking under a hood or to wait for their call to decide the game. Obviously, the reaction in the local crowd was incredible. I mean, they were you know, so pleased that it was called that way. But we go to football games to see these guys make the play. He made a fantastic play, and it was called against them.
Eric, Adam and I were talking earlier about when we get into this round of the playoffs, it's about the quarterback making big throws in big moments. We saw it yesterday with Tom Brady, Russell Wilson. Aaron Rodgers made a needle throw today to Richard Rodgers to win that game. It's weird for me to see Peyton Manning not be able to make those throws. I know he's older. This is probably hole 18, but it's still weird when he can't make big throws anymore.
Right. I mean, obviously there was a phase of his career. What if he now 9-11 all time in the postseason? There certainly have been a share of times where we've taken him to task for his playoff failures. There's no doubt about that.
But I just mean physically, though. Physically, yeah, he can't make the throws.
Right, and that's the difference, is that, you know, and he even overthrew a few today. It was almost like he was intent on, you know, like, stubborn so far, what I've seen up to this point on, I'm going to show people that I've got the arm strength, and, you know, he probably felt better after 13 days off or whatever it was. So, but, yeah, I mean, just missing on these plays. It looked like Tom Brady early in the season, where it was like his touch was off, his feel for the game was off. He was, you know, sort of seeing ghosts out there as far as pass rushes were concerned. He was, I mean, just a few plays ago, Manning was trying to thread this ball into Emmanuel Sanders with bracket coverage on the sideline on 3rd and 5. Now, I know Manning's not a runner, but he had about 28 yards of green in front of him. I mean, he could have walked for a first down. He could have done roundoffs and gotten a first down. So it's like his arm strength and lack thereof has almost affected his whole game.
So Rex Ryan, the Buffalo?
You got me, man. I mean, that's, I tell you what, even a few days ago, I was being told that the you know, Falcons were still strong on him, that there were multiple teams interested, and that he could sort of use this, you know, San Francisco and, you know, get a little triangulation thing going here, get the bids rolling in. But I guess Buffalo just kind of blew him away. And I don't know what other, you know, financial returns or measure of control, or, I mean, he's probably bringing Greg Roman with him. They work together in Baltimore. I don't know that that's exactly who I would have chosen for offensive coordinator, and no first-round pick, no quarterback. I mean, that's pretty frightening. If you didn't like Geno Smith, what are you going to do with A.J. Manuel?
Well, they're like cousins. I mean, they play the same type of ball. You know, they're both bad, and it works out. If you had to handicap the Bears' head coaching search, who's the favorite?
Well, you know, obviously, I'm sure you guys have heard, and I've obviously read the Gary Kubiak is the favorite thing, and It surprised me, and it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't in the sense that if you're going to go with a 37-year-old first-time GM, somebody who maybe looked a little green but knows this football and all that, maybe go with the steadier option as head coach. You know, kind of pair those two together, a little more wisdom, a little more innovation, whatever you want to say about that. But on the other hand, you know, not the most inspiring head coach of all time when he was in Houston. A lot of 8-8 type finishes, a lot of missing the playoffs, and then the grand fall from grace after winning 22 games combined in 2 years, they crash and burn badly in 2013. Now, that said, as recently as last week, I talked to some Baltimore Ravens players who raved about him and loved his offensive style, loved the way he coached and taught. People in Denver always said he was, you know, built to be a head coach. This was his sort of lot in life, if you will. So a lot of people have some real strong feelings that Gary Kubiak knows his coaching. So I would say he and Todd Bowles seem to be the most likely at this point.
He was 61-64 in Houston, but that was what he inherited was a tough situation. I mean, they had never had a winning season yet down there in Houston. And so I think overall, when I look back at Gary Kubiak in Houston, they did win 2 playoff games too. I mean, I'm more impressed than I am not impressed, if that makes sense. But looking back at that time, and I think that if he gets put in the right situation, that he could fall into the category of some of these coaches that have more success the second time around.
Yeah, you know, he's a smart guy. He's level-headed. He's passionate. He's got a lot of things going for him. I've heard his health problems that he had in 2013 are behind him. you know, 61-64. Take away the disaster season of 2013, a lot of it because, you know, Matt Schaub just completely fell apart between the years. I mean, you throw that out there, and he has a winning record as a head coach, 6 games above .500. My terrible math suits me well, but yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to like about him as a coach. That said, is it the most thrilling hire in the world? No, but that doesn't matter in the end. The matter is what he can do with his team and whether they can build a roster and be competitive very soon.
All right, Eric, we'll let you get back to this game. Colts and Denver's 21-10 now. Indianapolis with the lead. Thanks for joining us.
All right, guys. See you. Talk to you soon.
Keep fighting that fight, too. That was a catch. Keep fighting it. He hung up. He knew it was a catch.
Yeah, no, he was a... It probably should have been a catch.
It was a catch.
I understand by the... I mean, the ball did move, but we'd all like to see it be a catch. It was a great play.
We're heads up, Bucks and Ducks, right?
We'll have to have...
Fred Mitchell's going to have to punch one in the left column. I wonder who he's going to pick.
We'll be talking to Russ Mitchell.
Russ Mitchell, not Fred Mitchell. I'm sorry.
I think Fred was at the Northwestern game today, by the way. Northwestern...
Overtime.
They play Michigan State tough today.
Isn't it weird, though, every year, they can't play with the big boys at home, but every year they go on the road and they have a shocker. And they hang with... They have like 15-point underdogs, and they go to OT.
Yeah, it's true. Well, we'll talk to Russ Mitchell from the SEC Network as we get ready for this big college football game tomorrow. Looking forward to it. You're listening to The Beat here on WGN Radio.